Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website. And I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. I am recording this podcast on Monday, December 15th, 2008. This is podcast number 60. The PE10 level today is roughly 15. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The title of this podcast is Stock Cycles. And the focus is, it's primarily a book that goes by that name. Stock Cycles is a book published by Michael Alexander. It's an important book, one that I would recommend you read if you have a chance. This was published by Michael in the year 2000. The copy that I have is published by iUniverse, which was a form of self-publishing. And I think it's a scandal that this book was not published by a major publisher. It may be that it's been picked up by a major publisher since then. I've seen Michael's book referenced in numerous discussions on stock investing by intelligent people. And so this book has had an influence. And if I read it myself during the time when I was trying to educate myself about how stock investing works in the real world, which that education process continues to this day, but I read this a number of years ago, good long time ago, before the great safe withdrawal rate debate even began in May of 2002. But I have, as I say, it had a big influence on me. Not, I wouldn't say quite comparable to some of the classics, but almost. It's in a tier just a little below those. I wouldn't quite put it at the level of, I would put it at the level of Stocks for the Long Run. That's a classic, and I would put Stock Cycles at that level. I wouldn't quite put it at the level of, say, A Random Walk Down Wall Street. Random Walk Down Wall Street obviously had huge influence. I think I would put Bogle's book, Common Sense on Mutual Funds, at the level of A Random Walk Down Wall Street. I would certainly put Shiller's book. That's the most important book. Shiller's book, Irrational Exuberance, is the highest, most important book on investing that I've read. And I would put Security Analysis at that super high level. That wasn't published, it wasn't written by Warren Buffett, but it is the Bible that Warren Buffett used to learn about stock investing. So I would put those at the highest levels, and I would put Michael's book, Stock Cycles, at the level just below that. Extremely important books on investing that address one... The reason I don't put it quite at that highest level is that it addresses one aspect of the investing project. It does so in an extremely effective way, so it's an extremely important book. But it's not quite at the level of a book like Irrational Exuberance, in my estimation. But I would put it at the level of Stocks for the Long Run. That's a book that I loved. And, I would put Michael Alexander's book in that category. Very, very influential book. And as I say, I've seen numerous people refer to it, people who I respect, people of intelligence. And if that's the case, even with a self-published book, that gives you an idea of how influential this book would be if it were marketed and distributed by a major publisher, as it certainly should be, if it has not already been. The book is just filled with insights. An introductory comment I will make, and this is a comment that very much applies with Irrational Exuberance, but it certainly also applies with Michael's book. And it relates back into what rational investing, the model that I recommend, is all about. This book, while I say it's been cited, I've seen it cited by intelligent people in investing discussions, it has largely, not entirely, but to a large extent, not been incorporated into the thinking of investing experts advocating other advocating approaches that perhaps the message of this book doesn't fit so well with. You know, the one that I'm thinking of, obviously, is passive investing. That's the dominant model of today, the idea that you don't need to change your stock allocation at times of extremely high prices. Well, Michael's book, Stock Cycles, is a challenge to passive investing, if ever there was one. And, you know, the rational idea, I really don't think this should be a controversial thought I'm putting forward here, the rational approach to a challenge to your investing model is to study that challenge, to respond to it. In other words, the people who believe in passive investing should be debating what Michael says here and trying to determine, you know, if he's right. And his case is a scientific case. It's not just opinion he's putting forward here. He puts forward scientific evidence. If he's right, they should be making adjustments in their model, you know, in the passive investing strategy. If he's wrong, of course, they should not do that. But if he's wrong, they should put forward their argument, their an explanation of their reasoning process for why they think he's wrong. And I have certainly never seen such, if it exists. The same thing is very, very much true with Robert Shiller's book, Irrational Exuberance, and it has always annoyed me. It annoys me more with Robert Shiller's book because Robert Shiller's book was a bestseller. It obviously was published by a major publisher, and it received a great amount of attention. But what happened with Shiller's book is it received a great amount of attention. Everyone praised it, and then they just went right back to, you know, recommending the passive investing model as if Shiller had never said the things he said. And I just do not understand how people can, well, I guess it's human nature. You know, that's what you have to chalk it up to, that, oh, you know, the line from the Paul Simon song, a man hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest. We ignore things that don't fit our mindset, the things we're expecting to see. But the things you're not expecting to hear are the most important messages. So one of the principles of rational investing, the investing model that I advocate at the website, is when you find something that's a challenge to your way of thought, do not ignore it. Take the time, you know, instead of repeating your same old trite phrases over and over and over again, the phrases you use to convince yourself that your investing model is the best in the world, you know, respond to the challenge. Pick up the book that says something different and read it and study it and either incorporate its insights into your own, make adjustments in your model, or, you know, if you can reject it, in good conscience and with a reasonable argument, then do that, but explore it and do so in a fair way. And so the first point I have to say about the book Stock Cycles, this podcast is focused on the book, but then I also might make a few observations just about the concept of stock cycles in general, what the implications are of the fact that we know from reading this book that there is such a thing as stock cycles that affect how the stock market performs. All right, that's the preface. I'm going to be reading a little bit from the book, from the introduction, and from the first chapter. But you know, the book, of course, there's much more to it than that. It's not a non-technical book. That's possibly the only caveat. You know, I would urge you to read it. My caveat would be it is a technical book. I am not a technical person, and I gained a great deal from this book. So I would not say that this book should only be read if, you know, that you should read this book only if you are a technical-minded person. It does have something to offer to the non-technical reader because the insights are so important. However, there were sections of the book that I was not able to follow. And, you know, it's sort of, I have this when I read John Walter Russell's website. John Walter Russell does the research, you know, for the development of the valuation-informed indexing strategy and for the rational investing model of investing. And I've learned so many things from John, I couldn't catalog them. But there are articles that John publishes that I am not able to fully understand, and I read the sections, you know, I skim the parts I can't get, and then I drop down to his conclusions, and I see whether I usually can grasp the concepts, so I can make some use of all of John's research, and some of it I can make much fuller use of than others. But the same thing with Michael's book. It is on the technical side. So what we should have is we should have technically minded people reading this book and then reporting on it to us for the benefit of us non-technical people to gain from. But there's been some of that, but not nearly as much as there should have been, in my view. All right. The introduction makes, well, there's a point right here I see on the first page of the book that makes me laugh. There's a sentence from Michael's book where he says, this is the third paragraph of the book, and he starts it off by saying, how can expert opinions be so diametrically opposed? That question is what got me off on the journey, I've been on for the past 7 years. I was putting together my retire early plan back in the mid-1990s, and I had to decide. I was making a somewhat dangerous move, leaving a high-paying corporate job to become a freelance writer, to build a writing business ultimately on the internet. I didn't know it was going to be on the internet at the time. I wanted to provide for my family properly, so I needed to calculate what sort of risk I was taking and to be responsible in my decisions. And one of the things that hit me is, I've saved all this money to make it possible to do this, but how do I go about investing it? And as I started researching that question, I found experts on every side of every possible question. What should you do with your money? They're just all over the place. And I sort of said, what kind of, people talk as if investing is a science. They have all these charts and tables and studies, but yet everything's all over the place. What kind of science is this? You don't have the slightest idea what to do. I mean, Michael talks here in the introduction about weather forecasting, and at least with weather, some people complain about the weathermen. They say, they don't get it right all the time. Well, at least with weather forecasting, you have some idea what to do. Should you wear should you bring an umbrella today or not? Usually, the weatherman is a good guide. If he says there's 0% chance of rain, you really don't need to bring an umbrella. And if he says 90% chance of rain, you better bring one. So, maybe it's not a perfect science, but there's clearly some science going on there. With investing, it's just all over the map, and that frustrated me. I said, are there some things that we can learn and count on, or is it all gibberish? And what I found is there are some things we can count on. And, I have my gratitude to Michael Alexander. And I believe, my sense from reading the description of his background is that he is not really what you would call a stock investing expert. I always put the word expert in quotes when referring to investing experts. It says, Michael Alexander, PhD, is a research engineer at Pharmacia Corporation. He has had a lifelong interest in economic and stock market history. His first book, Stock Cycles, is the result of 5 years of historical research and economic analysis. So this man, he studied the subject in great depth, which obviously is a good thing if he's going to write a book on it. But it doesn't sound like he makes his living advising people. He's not a financial planner. And that may be why the book wasn't published by a major publisher. They want, you have this platform. They want you to be a financial planner. Well, it makes for a better book because a financial planner is compromised. Even if they're the most ethically upstanding person in the world, you're always going to be compromised by the fact that you want to say things that are going to bring you clients. And this book, Stock Cycles, is going to tell us why telling the truth about stock investing ain't going to bring you clients when prices are extremely overvalued. You see, the people who are in the stock selling industry, and all 90% of the people who advise us on how to invest are have a connection with the stock selling industry. They almost all of them do, and they're compromised. Whether they want to be or not, there's nothing they can do about it. They have intense pressures to shade what they tell us to make us happy. And of course, in one stage of the stock cycle, when prices are insanely overvalued, what most of us want to hear is stocks are good. Stocks are good. And the reality, of course, is exactly the opposite is true. And people are fooled. They think that this is a science, and they think that People in the industry know this, and they're going to pass it along to us. Well, some of them know it, and they can't pass it along because it would mean the failure of their businesses. And others don't even know it because they're in this industry, and they study what the industry tells them to study, and they're satisfied with that, and they never go beyond the bounds of the conventional wisdom, and so they never learn. And some of them, I think, go beyond the bounds a little bit, and they get nervous. They pick up a book like Stock Cycles, and they get nervous at what they see, and they put it down. Their tummy starts to hurt, and they put it down. So I love that quote, "How can expert opinions be so diametrically opposed?" Because I write for the typical middle-class investor. I'm not writing for other, I'm certainly not writing for the stock experts. I'm certainly not, I don't consider myself an investing expert myself. I don't want to be an investing expert. I want to be a reporter. I want to tell people realities. And that's my vision for my life's work. And I've had to study investing in great depth in order to report on it effectively. Because if you just take what the experts tell you, you're going to get it wrong. And a big reason why you're going to get it wrong is this concept of the stock cycle. So that's why we need to know this. This book is on a very important issue. That's why I rank it so high. Because I was trying to put pieces of a puzzle together. That's essentially what I was doing in learning how stock investing works in the real world. And Michael's book was a big part of the puzzle that clicked something into place. And what I love about the book is that he does not just say, my opinion is that there are stock cycles. He presents statistical data showing this. And I'm going to quote from it. I can't go in great depth in one podcast, but I will quote from it enough to give you a taste of how he goes about proving his case. But he makes a very interesting point in the introduction that I'd like to refer to, and he compares stock predictions to predictions about the weather, and it's a good prediction. I've made this prediction. I mean, it's a good comparison. I've made a good analogy. I've made that, and I made that comparison myself from time to time. And he says, no analyst can give precise answers to questions about the future of the stock market or the economy and be right all the time. Well, I make predictions about future stock returns. At my calculator, I have a calculator called the Stock Return Predictor. But I very much agree with Michael. No one can make these predictions and be right all the time. That is impossible. He says, this is the realm of prophecy or fortune telling, not scientific analysis. That's correct. On the other hand, and this is a controversial but extremely important comment, a comment supported by a mountain of evidence. On the other hand, it is not true that the future is completely unpredictable. Does that get you interested in what Michael has to say? He's telling you stock returns can be predicted. This is what the middle-class investor needs. If you want to put together a retirement plan, you need to know what's going to happen to your money. Are you investing at one of those times when stocks are going to be providing, for 10 years, they're going to be providing an average annual return of 17% real for 10 years running? Or are you investing at one of those times where stocks are going to be providing an annual real return of a negative 1% for 10 years running? Which environment are you in? Well, Michael can tell you. And that's why you need to either read his book or at least learn something about the insights contained in it. If you don't have the time available to read it yourself. On the other hand, it is not true that the future is completely unpredictable. As I write this sentence in January 2000, the temperature outside is well below freezing. If you were to ask me to predict whether it will be warmer or colder next Tuesday, I would be unable to give a correct answer. However, if you asked me what sort of temperatures to expect on April 9th, I could predict, quote, warmer than today, unquote, and almost certainly be right. That's a great description of what rational investing is all about. Rational investing is, you're not going to, no one can tell you. No one has a crystal ball. No one can tell you that exactly what the stock return is going to be 5 years from now or 10 years from now or 20 years from now. But we can sure give you a neighborhood number. If you tell us the valuation level for stocks at the day you purchase, we can give you a good neighborhood number. Stock returns are there. Statisticians have ways of quantifying the extent to which something is predictable. and stock returns 20 years out are 78% predictable. I am amazed by that. Every time I think about it, it blows my mind. If you purchase a broad stock index today, the S&P index or total stock market fund, you can purchase that. You can know today 78% what you're going to get in 20 years. That's how predictable stock returns are. They're not always that predictable. In 5 years, they're not, just barely a little bit predictable. In 10 years, they're predictable enough to make predictions statistically valid, but there's a fairly broad spectrum of possibilities at 10 years out. 15 years out, they're more predictable. 20 years, they're highly predictable. So you don't want to believe this passive investing stuff, that the market is always a good idea. It's always a good idea to be invested in stocks. You don't have to bother with valuations. You don't have to bother predicting returns. No, that's dangerous, dangerous, irresponsible stuff. You can make this prediction too, Michael says. How? We can confidently make this prediction because we know that April is a warmer month than January. Common sense, right? But what are April and January? They are points in time as marked by our calendar. Then he talks about the history of calendars. And he points out it is critical that the farmer properly times his planting with respect to the seasons. Now, he makes a very interesting historical observation, because I have said, there's an earlier podcast I did in which I argue that our knowledge of investing today is primitive. This is the reason why I always put the word expert in quotes when talking about an investing expert. There's no such thing as an investing expert today. Our knowledge of the subject is simply too primitive for anyone to claim expertise. And Rob Bennett's assessment. I will even say that of Robert Shiller, even though he's a giant, you know, among pygmies. He's a giant in a land of pygmies. The problem Robert Shiller has is, as much as he understands stock investing, and he understands stock investing better than anyone I can point you to, he is not able today to get the insights of all the other well-informed people. People like John Bogle, Warren Buffett, William Bernstein, Scott Burns, Michael Kitsis, on and on and on, William Bengen, all these people that, you know, we've corresponded with during the Great Debate. Shiller needs all those people contributing to become what I would call a true expert. There's no such thing as somebody who sits in a room and thinks grand thoughts, even if those thoughts are as grand as those thought up by Robert Shiller. In my mind, I think we learn as a community. That's how we test our ideas, and that's how we sharpen our ideas, and that's how we learn. And you can't do that today, because this passive investing nonsense is just so dominant, so omnipresent, and the advocates of the passive investing model are so intensely dogmatic that it's virtually impossible to hold intelligent conversations about how stock investing works today. That's an amazing claim. Check the post archives of the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate, and you'll see that I back it up. I can back that up with real-life evidence. Obviously, there are people who come up with great insights. Warren Buffett has many, many wonderful insights to offer. John Bogle has many, many wonderful insights to offer. And all the other people I mentioned have insights to offer. But they cannot. All of them also have flaws. Every one of those people I named has weaknesses. And those weaknesses can only be addressed. I don't know any weaknesses that Shiller has, but my guess is that he has them. And probably I don't see them, because I have weaknesses that I don't see in myself. And we can only overcome those weaknesses by having community discussions where we share, with people from different viewpoints. And today that rarely goes on. You don't see people from the Bogle camp. This idea of camps is so idiotic. But you don't see people from the Bogle camp discussing their ideas with people from the Shiller camp. And you don't see people from the Shiller camp discussing their ideas with people from the Buffett camp. And you don't see people from the Buffett camp discussing their ideas with people in the Bogle camp. Until that ends, until investors just become investors, people who want to learn how investing works so that they can profit from that knowledge, until that happens, and that's rational investing, until that happens, we all limit ourselves. All right, I didn't want to go off on that riff, but it brought it up. Something here that Michael said just got me off on that, but I'm just talking about this need to predict stock returns, and the idea of not wanting to predict stock returns is just you know, mind-blowingly insane. Why would you not want to know whether it's April outside or January outside when you're trying to decide whether to wear a coat or not? Obviously, that matters. So when you're trying to invest, you're trying to decide what your stock allocations can is going to be, how can you not care whether it's one of the January times to invest or one of the April times to invest? You've got to know that. And the opposition to learning that is so intense today, so painfully intense, so insanely intense. And all of that is due to this concept called passive investing, the idea that one stock allocation can work both in January and in April, which I just do not buy. So I'm very happy to see Michael Alexander, you know, questioning that orthodoxy. All right. So, but he goes back. Oh, I was saying how he talks about, this is where I got on the riff. He compares the development of knowledge of astrology to the development of knowledge of investing. And see, I think we are at the astrology stage. He talks about how astrology was once considered sort of a science. It was taken very seriously. And that's where investing is today. We're in the astrology era, the passive investing era of our understanding of how investing works. We're at a very primitive era. And what I believe is going to happen, what I certainly hope is going to happen, is that we are at the stage where we have done so much harm to ourselves with this last bull market that the pain is going to be so great that we are going to move to the next era. I don't think we can continue at this primitive stage any longer. Middle class people have too much riding on knowing how to invest to continue at this primitive understanding of how things work. And we're going to break down this idea of forming camps, enemy camps, where, you know, you can't talk to us because you read Robert Shiller's book, and we don't allow people who read Robert Shiller's book in this community. No, no, no. No, that makes our tummies hurt. We can't listen to those insights. Those are for different people. We have our own insights. We have our own dogmas. But it's interesting how knowledge has advanced in other fields of endeavor. And that's what we need to see happen with investing. So he talks about how the reason why calendars, he says people didn't know when they developed calendars why they worked. Here's what he says. He says, societies over the millennia have taken their calendars very seriously. They have constructed elaborate observatories, example Stonehenge, for making precise celestial observations in the effort to design accurate calendars. This effort was justified because it was apparent that calendars, quote-unquote, worked to predict the future of an agricultural economy, and more accurate calendars worked better. People needed calendars because they needed to know when to plant their crops. Here's the key part. But no one really understood why calendars worked. See, we know today why calendars worked. So today, you know, we look and we say, oh, you know, what idiots. But they weren't idiots. They were developing knowledge, just like we are in investing today. Bogle doesn't get it wrong about passive investing because Bogle's an idiot. Bogle's a genius. But he's an idiot on the question of stock allocations because he believes in passive investing, which he doesn't. It's like believing in astrology. He doesn't know. We need to change that. That's what I'm trying to do with the promotion of the rational investing model. But no one really understood why calendars worked. The most plausible explanation for correlation between the seasonal cycle and the stars was that the gods caused both. You know, the intent of the gods might be interpreted by study of the stars, and the evidence certainly supported this idea. Since the gods controlled the heavens and earth, it was reasonable that they controlled the lives of mere mortals too. Since the will of the gods for the seasons was revealed by the heavens, surely the will of the gods for the insignificant details of a person's life were revealed by the heavens as well. Thus was born the, quote, science, unquote, of astrology. He's telling us why it is that people believed astrology was a science. Because they had come up with these calendars, and the calendars worked. It was, you know, that most people made their living farming, and you had to know whether it was January or April, or you were going to starve to death. So people loved their calendars. Calendars were important. And they said, well, why do these things work? You know, how the heck do these calendars know when it's going to be okay to plant the crops and when it's not? They didn't have the other sciences to tell them. So they said, well, I guess the gods do it. And if the gods do that, the gods must be controlling our lives too. And so maybe the gods have all the clues up in the stars to how our lives are going to proceed. You see? It made sense. This is what I love about this. When you can solve a puzzle, click the piece into place. Michael Alexander's telling us why people believed in astrology. And, you know, 100 years from now, people are going to look back and they're going to say, oh, those people back in December of 2008, it's sad, but they used to think that the market was efficient. They used to think stocks were always a good investment, that if you held stocks for the long term, it would work out. Oh, these people, they were so pathetic. They were so sad, but the poor dears, here's why they believed it. And then they'll bring out these studies and they'll say, you see, there were studies saying this. They weren't really stupid. They were smart, but they fell for these studies. And the studies, you know, they peer review stamped on them. You know, why wouldn't you believe it? You know, Harvard professors, you know, smart people, smart as the Dickens. They believed in this stuff because, you see, there is truth in the efficient market theory. I make fun of it. I say the efficient market theory is a big bunch of hooey, and it is. But there's important truths buried in what we know as the efficient market theory. Very, very, very important truths. The efficient market theory, the discovery of the efficient market theory was a huge advance in our understanding of how investing works. And what happened is that we jumped to conclusions. Just as people jumped to conclusions that astrology could tell us about our lives, we jumped to the conclusion that the efficient market theory could tell us all there is to know about how investing works, and it ain't the truth. So beware. Beware of people that jump to conclusions and call it science. He's even got the word science in quotes. Like I put the word science in quotes when talking about the science of passive investing, and I put the word expert in quotes when talking about the experts who advocate passive investing. I'll continue with this a little long, just one more paragraph, because I love this. I love this. You know, it doesn't have a direct application in telling you exactly what to do with your money, but it helps you understand why passive investing has gotten as far as it has. And if you don't understand that, you're never going to have confidence in what your common sense tells you. Rational investing says listen to your common sense and when trying to understand how investing works. Passive investing says the opposite. Ignore common sense. Go with these studies. You know, your common sense tells you stocks are not going to offer as good a value proposition when they're priced insanely high. But passive investing says, no, 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 ignore common sense. There's some kind of thing in the air that, you know, makes investing different than every other human endeavor. And this is one case where common sense doesn't apply. You have to ignore common sense, and you have to believe in the passive investing model. You have to not change your allocation, even though your common sense tells you you should. It's too dangerous, but you got to ignore that. Why did people ever come to believe this? Michael's explaining that in the introduction to his book. He says the ancients held both astrology and the calendar as equally valid. You see, there was science and science fiction being mixed together. That's what we have in the efficient market theory. Parts of it are true. But the parts that aren't true are pure poison. The idea that the market, that you can invest in stocks at any time with equal risk, that's pure poison. And so we're treating astrology and the calendar as equally valid. We're doing the same thing today in the investing realm. Then came Copernicus, Kepler, and Galileo, and people discovered why there was a linkage between the stars and seasons. This exact question came up just this morning at the Goon Central Board. There was a guy, A2Z, and A2Z has put up a thread on Friday, and then he put up a new thread today. And A2Z argued, he said, you know, the goons, as a rule, will not acknowledge anything that rational investors say. So they just say, oh, you know, people who believe in you know, what the historical data says, they're mental cases. You know, they need to be on meds. They're crazy people. And of course, that's just goon talk. That's just, the effort there is just to intimidate, to shut people up, to silence people. So that you know, the passive investors won't feel funny, their tummies won't feel funny about the flaws in their model. But A to Z didn't do that. A to Z took a semi-rational approach. He said, you know, Rob is right about the correlation. You know, Rob is always pointing to the historical data, which shows that there's a strong correlation between the PE10 level and the performance of stocks in the future. And, you know, why don't we just acknowledge Rob is right? The evidence is overwhelming. We can't deny the reality. Let's acknowledge that. But then he said, he says valuation-informed indexing won't work. The idea of changing your allocation won't work. Why? He says, yes, there's a correlation, but there's no causation. There's a correlation, but no causation. And he's quite right that it is, you know, correlation does not prove causation. That's true. It's not enough to just say the data shows that PE10 predicts future returns. That's not enough. You have to come up with an understanding of why it does so, or else it's not safe to rely on that correlation. The correlation may stop working, may not work in the future. You have to understand the why of it. And so I put a post to the board this morning explaining the correlation. The correlation is not the causation, not the correlation, explaining the causation. In other words, why is it that PE10 can predict future returns? The answer is the market is self-correcting. The market is efficient in the long term. Not in the short term, but in the very distant long term, the market's efficient. And the market is always in the process of becoming more efficient. In the short term, it's always emotional, wildly inefficient, but it's always in the process of becoming more efficient. And the market is a little bit efficient at 5 years. It's reasonably efficient by the end of 10 years. It's highly efficient by the end of 20 years, and it's more, you know, very efficient by the end of 30 years, almost perfectly efficient at the end of 60 years. It's always in the process of becoming more efficient. That's because there's a self-correcting mechanism. This is what A to Z didn't grasp. The market in January of 2000, stock prices were 3 times fair value. So every dollar of stocks you purchased in January of 2000, you were buying 33 cents of economic producing businesses, and your other 67 cents were just buying cotton candy, you know, human emotions that just change like the wind, you know, no economic substance to it. Whereas today, when we're at fair value, all of your money is going to the purchase of economic substance. So today, the value proposition is a very, very different thing. But what happens when you get to the valuation levels that applied in January of 2000 is stock prices are so high that the expected 10-year return on stocks was a negative number. Stocks were priced so absurdly, so insanely, that stocks could no longer even provide a positive return. This is the subtitle of Michael's book. The subtitle of his book. His book is called Stock Cycles: Why Stocks Won't Beat Money Markets Over the Next 20 Years. You see what an expert Michael Alexander is? He doesn't work for a big mutual fund. Not a financial planner. He doesn't have all these letters after his name. But he's a lot smarter, a lot more of an expert than the people who do, most of the people who do. He told us in advance that stocks wouldn't beat money markets, and they haven't. Stocks haven't beaten money markets for the past 9 years. Money markets have done better. I personally would have gone with TIPS, Treasury Inflation Protected Securities, rather than money markets, because TIPS did better than either one. TIPS trounced stocks over the past 9 years. It's not even a close call. But Michael's right that money markets have beat stocks, and it wasn't a surprise to anyone who was aware of how stocks work in the real world. Money markets were almost sure to beat stocks because stocks prices were so high. If stocks were to remain at that valuation level forever, the market would have collapsed. Part of the purpose of a market is to price things properly. So we don't want the stock market to collapse, believe me. That's bad for everybody. So what happens is when prices are so high is that stocks provide a negative return on an ongoing basis. Now, that doesn't make people sell stocks. You see, in January of 2000, I could have told you stocks would provide a negative return for 10 years, but I couldn't persuade you to sell your stocks. That's a different thing. That's an emotional question. To state the realities can be done objectively. That we can do by looking at the data. But to persuade people to sell their stocks, that's an emotional matter. That we couldn't do. And so people continue to hold stocks, even though they're providing a negative return, even though money markets and tips are both doing better. But as time goes on, you see, people get fed up. They say, what? I've got all my money in this risky investment class and I'm earning a negative return while my neighbors are investing in tips and they're earning a positive, you know, fairly big positive return. Tips were paying 4% real. That's a heck of a lot better than a negative return, 4% real every year. Year after year after year, people get fed up with those negative returns. And that's what happened in the past 15 months. People have been earning, you know, a negative return on stocks, but it wasn't much negative. It was just a little bit negative. It wasn't that bad. It was stocks were staying at the same level for 9 years, 8 years, and they were, you know, inflation was eroding the value of the money you had in stocks, but dividends were more or less making up for the loss from inflation. So you were sort of holding steady. You would have done better in a money market. You would have done a whole lot better in tips, you know, but it wasn't a crash, you know, but people were getting fed up. So then when you have a bad economic event like we've had in the past 15 months, that might ordinarily, if prices had been at normal levels, it might have caused a little drop in stock prices, you know, 10% or 20%, whatever. That's like a tsunami, you know. It's going to change the history of investing because prices were so high that we have a crash. And now people are saying, wait, now they're really fed up. They were fed up before. Now they're, you know, the ones that weren't fed up before now are fed up. And of course, we may see more of this. You know, it may be another 5-6 years before we're out of this. We may see another 50% price drop with increases mixed in, to be sure. But, you know, another 5 years from now, we may see another 50, 60, 70% price drop. And when that happens, then people are going to be even more fed up. So the point is, there is causation. It's not just correlation. High prices cause people to get disgusted with stocks. And when people get, but it, we can't say when. You know, if people were rational, if the market were instantly efficient, as is claimed, people would get fed up instantly. They'd read Michael's book and they'd say, what? Stocks are not going to beat money markets? Well, take our money out of... Hey, honey, you know, we got to take our money out of stocks. We can get higher money, higher returns in money markets. Tips are way higher. What are we doing? See, everybody would do that if we were all rational, but we're not. If even the experts were rational, we would all do that, because most of us listen to the experts. And if the experts would just tell us what's in Michael's book and what's in Shiller's book and, you know, what's a John Walter Russell site and all the, you know, what Cliff S. Ness knows and what Rob Arnott knows and what, you know, Ed Easterling knows and what Andrew Smithers knows. If the experts would tell us that, we would all take our money out of stocks. You don't need an IQ of 140 to know that you don't want have all your money in stocks at a time when they're paying a negative return. But the experts too are human, and the experts too get caught up in the emotion of passive investing, and they don't tell us these things, or they downplay it. And so the returns become poor and we get fed up. And then as we become fed up, the prices fall. The market is self-regulating. In the long run, the market is self-regulating, not in the short term. See, efficient market theory says the market regulates in the short term. Nothing could be farther from the truth. The market regulates only in the long term. So I could tell you in January 2000, investing in stocks is a very, very, very bad idea today, but I could not tell you when the price crash was coming. I knew it was coming with certainty, but I could not say when, and neither could Michael Alexander. And so we're sort of halfway there to making investing a science. This is the point I'm trying to make. We're halfway there. You know, we've got some of the elements in place. We've really got all the intellectual elements in place. All the pieces of the puzzle are there. But what we don't have today is the willingness on the part of the experts to explain the realities. That's what's lacking today. When we get that, we're there. We just, you know, we take books like Bogle's book and, you know, Stocks for the Long Run and Buffett, you know, Security Analysis, and Shiller, Rational Exuberance, and Michael Alexander, Stock Cycles, and John Wooler Russell's website, Schiller's Irrational Exuberance. We put all those things together, and we've got it. It's all there. It's all there. As far as I can tell, it's all there. We've solved the investing problem. That's not an issue. The intellectual side is not a problem today. What we need is to bring passive investing down so that the quote-unquote experts become less dogmatic and they're willing to listen to other points of view and other insights, insights coming from the enemy camps. And when we have that, we've got it all. You know, I believe we will enter a golden age of middle-class investing. But we are now at this pathetic stage where we think of, passive investing as science, just like people once thought of astrology as science. So he says, we discovered why there was a linkage. That was the breakthrough. We discovered from Copernicus and Kepler and Galileo why there was a linkage between the stars and the seasons. And that changed everything. That's what we need in the investing area. We need people to understand the linkage. Why? We know that the evidence shows correlation between PE10, very strong correlation between PE10 and long-term stock returns. We need to get through the heads of the experts why there's this correlation. We need them to understand causation. The question I was discussing with my post to A to Z this morning. The seasons are, I'm reading Michael Alexander again. The seasons are simply the natural consequence of the fact that the Earth revolves around the Sun and that the Earth's axis of rotation is tilted with respect to the plane defined by the Earth's orbit. All right. All of a sudden, it became clear that the calendar, quote, should, unquote, work and that it is completely natural that it does. You see? Valuations should tell us future returns. It is completely natural that PE10 would tell you what your stock allocation should be. It is completely natural. There's nothing surprising about it, nothing unexpected about it, nothing strange about it, nothing controversial about it. Valuation-informed indexing is the only approach to indexing that ever could work in the real world, says Rob Bennett. Rational investing is the most natural thing in the world. Back to Michael Alexander. However, this mechanical arrangement of the Earth and Sun did not provide a mechanism for why astrology should work. Furthermore, the track record of astrology had never been as reliable as the calendar. Deprived of the support of the obvious validity of calendrical methods, astrology lost its status as a science. This is what will happen with passive investing. As we learn that there is an efficient market, but only in the distant long term does the market become truly efficient. And in the short term, it's not efficient at all. As we learn these realities, we will know why PE10 predicts future returns. And we will know why passive investing needs to lose its status as a science. The idea that you could stick with one stock allocation is not science, it's gibberish. Makes no sense. The data doesn't support it. Common sense doesn't support it. Nothing supports it. Except, you know, we poor befuddled humans jump to a conclusion that the market not only was efficient, which the evidence does indeed suggest, but that the market was instantly efficient. You see, we made this huge mistake. And we're living through the consequences of that mistake today. That's all the pain we're suffering today is a result of jumping to a wrong conclusion. Back when Eugene Fama first put forward his efficient market theory idea, which in itself was a huge advance, but misapplied has led, I think it would be fair to say, to more human misery than any idea in the history of the personal finance literature. All right, so that's just the introduction. Boy, wait till you get to the full text of the book. Well, I'm not going to have time to go through all the implications of stock cycles. I'm just going to have to focus on Michael's book, but I do want to get to the point where Michael shows that stock cycles exist. See, the fact that stock cycles exist is important for numerous reasons. Two main reasons. One, of course, it tells you when you want to invest in stocks. You don't want to be going with the same stock allocation at all times if there are stock cycles, okay? What he means by stock cycles is there are long periods of time when stocks are a wonderful asset class. And then there are long periods of time when stocks are a horrible asset class. And you don't want to be caught thinking that passive investing works and that you can just stay invested regardless. You want, obviously, to have a higher stock allocation during the time when stocks are a wonderful asset class and a lower allocation at times when stocks are a horrible asset class. You want to acknowledge that there are stock cycles. You want to know what cycle you are in at the given moment, and you want to adjust your stock allocation accordingly. So he talks a bit about the conventional wisdom. You know, why we, and oh, the second reason I wanted to point out, that's the first reason why you want to understand that there are stock cycles. The second thing you want to get from this is stock cycles explain why all the experts get it wrong. Not all, most, 90% of the experts get it wrong. Why is it so many people, so many smart people, so many good people put forward such horrible investing advice? They tell us to keep our money in stocks, even at times of insanely dangerous prices. Why? Why do these people do this? It's because of stock cycles. Most of these people, I love this comment by Michael Kitsis just a few weeks ago. Michael pointed out that the financial planning industry is a fairly new industry, and it came into existence during a wild bull market. So all these people have ever studied is how stocks invest during wild bull markets. They don't know anything about. There is no science of investing in a bear market. There was no investing science at that time. All of this is new. Investing didn't used to be thought of as a science. So many of the studies support what people thought was the reality during the most emotional time to invest in the history of the United States, when prices were just climbing insanely. Now, there is literature pointing out, you know, that none of this works. That's the literature developed by Robert Shiller and many others, but he's the leader. And that literature began in 1981, so it's now been around for about three decades. But that literature was very much hushed up for a long, long time, for basically 30 years now. You can't talk about it. The experts know about it, but they also know not to talk about it. The penalties are severe because clients, you know, will not hire you if you tell them the realities of stock investing. Unless you're in one of these camps, you know, you're in a bear camp, you know, then they'll hire you, of course. But that's, you know, 10% of the investing population. So what we need to do to reform investing is to take these insights that people like Shiller and many, many others, not just him, have been developing for 30 years. And we need to tell everybody else about them, you know, open up the door. Let people learn the realities, and then you won't. I don't think you'll have. I don't think you'll have stock cycles anymore. But that's a question for a different podcast. But if people understand, see, if we become self-aware of why there are cycles, the reason why there are cycles is that investing is such an emotional endeavor, highly emotional endeavor. The efficient market theory presumes it's a 100% rational endeavor. Nothing could be further from the truth. Investing is a highly emotional endeavor. And that causes these extreme stock cycles, because what happens is when prices are going up, see, prices wouldn't go so high if it weren't for passive investing. But once you come up with a theory justifying buying stocks at times of insane price levels, that's what passive investing does. Once you have such a theory, it's like taking the brakes off a car. There's no way to stop it. It's just going to go. You know, the only argument you can make for not buying stocks at extreme price levels is that, you know, price is going to collapse. You're going to suffer a stock crash. But passive investing says, hey, we don't, you know, there's no way to know when there's going to be a stock crash. No correlation between, you know, stocks aren't more dangerous at times of insane prices. Stocks are always wonderful. Always. Always. It's all efficient. All this stuff is priced in. Market's got it right. Market's rational. See, all that's wrong. But it's a rationalization that is developed whenever prices are insanely high. So whenever prices are insanely high, we come to believe that prices don't matter. And most of the expert investing advice of today is a product of that insane psychology. And so this is why you need to know why that there are stock cycles, because that explains why the investing advice is so horribly deficient. The only way we can ever have solid investing advice, good investing advice, is if we become self-aware. If we become self-aware of the emotional side of the stock investing project, And that's what I'm trying to do with all of these podcasts and with all the articles at my site. Rational investing is investing, an investing model which aims to make us self-aware, aware of our investing emotions, not to ignore them as we do with passive investing, not to tune them out, but to become aware of them. And once we become aware of them, we can protect ourselves from them. And once we protect ourselves from them, we put the brake back on the car. We put the brake back on the car. So when the car is going out of control, when you get to, say, a PE10 level of 20, you start tapping the brake a little bit. And you get back down, say, at 18, and you're okay. You never have insanely high prices. And then, of course, if you don't have insanely high prices, you never have insanely low prices. You protect yourself. Rational investors protect themselves from the worst excesses of stock cycles. So the last thing I want to do here is to explain Michael's proof of the stock cycle. And I'm only doing the most basic proof. I'm not going into the advanced stuff because it gets too technical and it would take too long to go through it all. Read the book. If you want the full story, please read Michael's book. He wrote a fantastic book and he deserves, you know, he deserves to have you read it, and you deserve to read it. You deserve to get the benefits of it. So he says, stocks beat money markets as figure 2.2 shows, stocks beat money markets most of the time over all holding periods. The longer the period, the higher the chance of stocks beating money market funds. This is not surprising, and it's not. That all makes sense. You would think stocks would beat money markets, wouldn't you? Much riskier asset class. So you should be compensated for that risk. And he says, this is why financial advisors urge substantial investments in common stocks. It is also why stock market experts say now is always the time to invest. Always be invested in stocks. The risk is higher. The return should be higher. Always invest in stocks. That's where all this passive investing stuff comes from. Then he says, is this always true? The assumption behind the above statement is that all periods are alike. That's the flaw. That's why the old school safe withdrawal rate studies all get the numbers wildly wrong. They assume that all periods are alike. That's why the book, Stocks for the Long Run, said if you hold stocks long enough, it'll always be a good buy. Because the author of that book, Jeremy Siegel, believed that all periods are alike, but all periods are not alike. There are stock cycles. Some periods, stocks offer a far better value proposition than what we've been told. They don't deliver 6.5% real per year. They deliver 17% real per year. In the really good times, stocks are just laughingly good. You can't even describe how good they are. And at other times, the long-term return from stocks is negative. Stocks will wipe you out. Come to believe in passive investing, and sooner or later, stocks will wipe you out. You'll have to start over again. You'll probably lose. You may not lose all your money, but you'll lose most of it. You'll be one of these people who vows never to own stocks again for as long as you live. That's where those people come from. They come from, they happen to be born at a time when, you know, some version of passive / emotional investing became wildly popular, and they were burned so much, they lost so much of their life savings that they vow never again to, you know, say the word stocks. That's what we're going through today. People are learning that lesson, that passive investing is dangerous stuff, not prudent stuff at all. So then Michael explores this question, you know, all periods are not alike. He says, if stock returns are truly random, then we should expect periods of above and below average performance to appear randomly, like flipping a coin. Makes sense, right? So he says, let's consider, let's examine this. And first he explores short-term randomness, and I won't go through that, but he shows by flipping a coin that the results you get, and then comparing that to the results you get with stock returns over the short term, he shows that short-term returns are random. They're not predictable, you know, and that's what we've been saying in the retire early boards and the indexing discussion boards for 7 years now. Short-term timing doesn't work. That's the huge insight that came out of the passive investing model. The passive investing model tells us short-term timing does not work, and that's true, and it's of huge importance. So that's a legitimate insight that we learned as a result of this discredited model. It's not entirely discredited, you see. It taught us important things. It's just discredited in terms of the investing advice it offers, which is horrible, frighteningly horrible. Millions of retirements will fail as a result of the errors in the passive investing model, presuming that stocks perform in the future anything at all as they always have in the past. All right. So he says, what we can do is determine whether the returns from successive non-overlapping periods are above or below average. This is equivalent to carrying out a series of coin flips and noting the sequence of heads and tails obtained. I apologize if this is slightly technical, but if you really want to understand it in depth, please do get the book or get the book out of the library. You know, read the book. The sequence is then examined for signs of non-randomness. For example, that's just explaining the methodology Michael uses. For example, if we flipped 8 coins in sequence and got the result, he's going to give four results here. Heads, tails, heads, tails, heads, tails, heads, tails. That's one group. Tails, heads, tails, heads, tails, heads, tails, heads. Second group. Third group. Tails, tails, heads, heads. Tails, tails, heads, heads. Fourth group. Heads, heads, tails, tails. Heads, heads, tails, tails. We would be surprised. If things came up that orderly, we'd be surprised. That's not what we would expect. Strictly alternating patterns like these are unlikely. The probability of any of these patterns arising from 8 random coin flips is 1 in 64. A similar pattern in stock returns from sequential periods would also suggest non-randomness. You understand the methodology? He's now going to look at long-term stock returns and see whether they are random, which is what you would expect if the market were efficient, if passive investing worked, the returns would be random. Or is he going to find a significant amount of non-randomness, the types of patterns I just described, where it comes up heads, tails, heads, tails, heads, tails? That would not be what you would expect. That would be non-random behavior. And if you see non-random behavior, there's a stock cycle there. It ain't performing the way the passive investing people say. No way, no how. So he says stock returns were calculated over sequential periods 9 to 20 years in length. So this is long term. He's looking long term. We found randomness in the short term, just as we expected. Short term timing doesn't work, according to Michael Alexander, author of Stock Cycles. But long term timing, that's something different. What we would like to know is, quoting from Michael, what we would like to know is whether any of the patterns are sufficiently special. He says, stock returns were calculated over sequential periods 9 to 20 years in length. For each return in sequence, it was determined whether it was above or below the median value. Above counts as a heads and below counts as a tails. Then he gives the results and he says, what we would like to know is whether any of the patterns are sufficiently special that its appearance would likely not be the result of chance. In this case, we can surmise that there is some non-random phenomenon that produces these alternating patterns of good and bad returns. The 13-year returns show 12 strictly alternating good heads and bad tails returns. So we don't get random results at the long term. We get highly non-random results. The probability of such a pattern appearing in any of the entries in Table 2.1 is only 3.9%, strongly suggesting that the pattern exhibited by the 13-year period is non-random. The shortest repeating sequence in the special pattern for the 13-year case was 2 periods long, or 26 years, implying a 26-year cycle might be operating in stocks returns. Here we see evidence of non-random behavior on a multi-decade timescale. Okay? So stock returns are not random. Market's not efficient. Passive investing doesn't work. Stocks are sometimes in a January period where you get lots of snow, and stocks are sometimes in an August period where you get lots of hot weather. And if you want to set your allocation rationally, you need to know what time period you're in. So going on to where he states his conclusion. This finding suggests that valuation has little effect on short-term performance, exactly what we would expect for a random process. Over a five-year period, the stock index beats the money market return 58% of the time in overvalue markets as compared to 74% of the time for all markets. Over a 10-year period, the index beats the money market return 54% of the time in overvalued markets as compared to 82% of the time in all markets. Finally, over a 20-year period, the stock index beats the money rate 52% of the time in overvalued markets compared to 93% of the time in all markets. Notice that holding for longer periods of time does not improve the chances of stock returns beating a money market fund. Holding longer doesn't help you beat the money market fund. This is a direct contradiction of the stocks for the long term hypothesis, the book, famous book, Stocks for the Long Term. Stocks for the Long Term is right in one sense. It's a very, very important insight. Again, all of these half-truths that we've learned over the past 30 years contain powerful insights and then powerful untruths mixed, poisoning the index, the insight. Stocks for the long term tells us if you hold stocks for a long time, it'll pay off. What the reality is, what the data really says when you look at it in analytically valid ways, is that if you buy stocks at times of low or moderate prices, holding stocks for the long term will always work. And if you buy stocks at times of insanely high prices, stocks will always provide a poor return over the long term. It'll never work. The opposite of what the book says. The worst thing you can do is invest heavily in stocks at times of high prices. As we've seen, we saw high prices, insanely high prices applied from 1995 through the first part of 2008. That was the worst time to own stocks in the history of the United States. And there were more experts arguing to invest heavily in stocks during that time period than there have ever been in the history of the United States. The experts have been telling us for 30 years exactly the opposite of what works in stock investing. So, overvaluation temporarily suspends the benefits of the long-term upward trend shown in Figure 2.1. Overvaluation changes everything. Now, here's just one sentence or a couple sentences stating Michael's thesis in plain, clear language. The effect of holding time on stock returns in overvalued markets is the opposite of what it is for all other markets. Normally, holding stocks for longer amounts of time increases the probability that they will beat other type of investments, such as money markets. This observation led to the commonly held belief that for long-term investors, any time is a good time to invest, since the long-term trend in Figure 2.1 dominates over time. In the case of overvalued markets like today, holding for longer times, up to 20 years, does not increase your odds of success. That is why it is wise today to move assets from large cap stocks, mutual funds, and index funds and put them in an alternate investment such as a money market fund. Well, I would say TIPS, put it into Treasury Inflation Protected Securities. But those days are over, right? Some people are going to hear this and they're going to say, Rob, thanks, but I've lost most of my retirement money. You know, I bought into what the experts told me. I've been destroyed. Your message is too late. No, it's not too late. You've lost the money, and the money's gone, and there's not a thing we can do about that. That part's true. But what Michael's telling us is a better way to invest for the future. If you continue to believe in passive investing, it's going to wipe you out. I'm confident of that. If it hasn't wiped you out yet, it will. We have not necessarily seen the last stock crash of caused by passive investing. Don't think we have, please. Robert Shiller made this point in a recent article. He said, our problem today is a psychological problem. And the problem is that people don't get it yet, that passive investing can't work. People are hoping they're going to get the money back. That's what lots of people are hoping. And even those who have given up on getting the money back, they think, no sense learning about this stuff now because it's too late. It's not too late. If you understand rational investing, you'll know what to do on a going forward basis. You'll understand the probabilities. And right now, the probabilities, the long-term probabilities are good today at today's prices. But in the short term, and by short term I mean less than 10 years, say 5 years, 6 years out, there's a good chance we're going to have another huge price crash in that time. So you need to know about that. You don't want to get scared by it. You don't want to go to a zero stock allocation because the long-term return is good, and we can't say when the stock crash is coming. So you need to be invested in stocks today. But if you're a passive investor and you're already emotionally rattled, the likelihood is you're going to get wiped out in the next crash. If you're a rational investor and you understand what's happening and you're prepared for it, you will be able to stick with your stock investment long enough for it to pay off this time. That's where you want to be. And of course, you'll be setting your allocation consistent with your, you know, your true risk tolerance. Passive investors say to set your stock allocation according to your risk tolerance, but then they remove the tool you need to figure out your risk tolerance. How the heck can you know what your risk tolerance is when you have no idea how stocks are going to perform? You know, you can't. You know, they say at bogleheads.org, they say, be prepared for 50% loss. Well, we've already seen a 50% loss. Obviously, that was wrong. You know, 50% loss is nothing at the sort of valuation levels we've been at in recent years. Nothing. In 1929, we saw an 89% loss, and valuations were far lower in 1929 than they were in 2000. So, you know, 50% doesn't even begin to touch it. Not at these values. Now today, 50%, that's a good number today. That's probably the worst we'll see starting from today. It's 50%. So today, that advice is good now that we're back at reasonable valuation levels. But it was totally off the wall a year ago, and it's been totally off the wall for 10 years now. So you need to learn about how stock investing really works to have any chance of surviving, you know. But if you learn, the rewards can be huge. And as I say, we may have one more crash coming. I can't say that for sure, but there's certainly a good chance we're going to see another crash. If I think that the key is whether we accept that passive investing has failed. If we accept that passive investing has failed and get the message out about how stock investing really works, I don't think we'll see another crash. I think we can get through it without it. But if we don't get that message out, I think there'll be another crash. The emotional factors are dominant. And as long as people are investing passively, emotion's going to continue to be dominant. And that's going to hurt us. But if you learn how investing really works in the real world, you know, you want to be preparing today for that next crash. Because after the crash, say we get down to a PE10 level of 7 or 8, which is what usually happens. At a PE10 level of 7, the most likely 10-year return is 17% real per year. You want to be part of that. You can make up a lot of the losses you suffered today. You can make up if you learn how investing works in the real world in the next year or two or three. But if you keep your head in the sand and you just say, well, you know, the experts, they think, you know, passive investing, it doesn't have a good track record, but I don't know. Maybe I don't want to spend a weekend learning about investing. I'm going to go with the experts. Well, you're probably going to be wiped out. Probably going to be wiped out. I can't say for certain, but that's the odds. And if you're wiped out, you're not going to be participating when returns are 17% a year. You're not going to be participating in the new stage of the positive part of the stock cycle, the new summer. If you lose everything in winter, you don't live to see summer. As a stock investor, you might, you know, I don't know, you might be in money markets, but you're not going to be in stocks. You're going to be too scared of stocks. To work up the courage to invest in stocks, you need confidence that your strategy is going to work in the real world. And no one can ever have confidence in passive investing because it runs counter to common sense. The idea that prices don't matter is absolutely counter to common sense. And so no human being can ever have true confidence in that idea. It's a shaky idea. It causes panic. Passive investing causes panic. So you don't need to change your stock allocation except when prices are insane. And they're not insane now. So this isn't one of those times. And we might not be at one of those times for some time to come. I hope not. Sure hope not. But You need to understand how stock investing works at all times, because only by understanding how it works will you gain confidence in your strategies, and only by gaining confidence in your strategies will you be one of the fortunate few who will be taking advantage of the next stock cycle, the next summertime for stock investors. You want to be prepared for that. And the way to do that is to read books like Stock Cycles, and read all these other people I've made reference to, and learn about the flaws in the passive investing model and learn about the benefits of becoming a rational investor. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.